done.
All right, you're ready to roll.
Okay.
D is in David.
All right, good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Culk. We're meeting on the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It is Friday, April 25th, approximately 10:30 a.m. Let's see here. We're meeting for the work session on case number PU 13-848, which is Enbridge Pipeline LLC's 24-inch crude oil pipeline sandpiper project. I think what we'll do to start out with is just a few housekeeping questions, and then we'll probably get into some more strategy, if you will, on how we're going to proceed forward. So, Commissioner Crispin, Randy, do you have any comments before we get rolling here?
I do not have opening comments. Ready to get started.
Okay. Just a setup question for Mitch or Brian. Who's our lead? Brian, you were the lead, right? Mitch is here to kind of keep an eye on us.
Essentially, yeah, that's how we plan on having this thing go.
All right, good. No, that's good. It's a very big case, and it'll work. I just had a procedural question. The Alana talked to me yesterday, as our general counsel role, about, and when Commissioner Fedorchuk gets here, we'll ask her that question, but the executive session proposal on some trade secret information, could you walk me through what exactly that is? Well, we do executive sessions, but this has a little twist to it, the way I understand it.
Well, basically, there's several documents filed with trade secret here, but basically they involve the exact precise location of the line, and trade secret's been granted for that. So if we get into saying real specifics about landmarks, that would be the precise location of a line in relation to something, that's when we would go into a closed session for that. Otherwise, everything else is pretty much open game. There's been one trade
secret. Let me ask that question then, because, okay, I've done lots of pipeline hearings, and so why is this one different on exact locations, or has it always been the case?
It hasn't always been the case, and it won't always be the case. My recollection of it is it has to do with being interstate and going as long as it is and being the amount of gallons it is. So okay. I guess at least they've designated it as critical energy infrastructure, which
maybe, and that's feds, though. It's federal.
Well, that Enbridge has said they believe it is and has asked for it to be classified as a trade secret based on that. And, you know, it's really pretty limited information that's trade secret. I mean, we still have the maps and pretty close locations of where everything's at. It's just the real specifics in case there was some sort of, plan on, military.
Well, no, I understand the need for it, but I'm trying to get more clarity on, it's funny this never came out during the hearings, that this, because we asked a lot of questions about precise locations, and there was a lot of discussion about depth of it as it relates to the Devil's Lake Basin water levels, and there was some assurance, I guess, given that they would provide that information, and I suppose they can provide it, but it then becomes trade secret because of federal law, how they're interpreting it.
Yep.
That's what I'm reading. Is that right?
Yeah, and it's what is trade secret and what they've sought trade secret for is actually very limited in this case. I think we're free to kind of carry on, and I talked to Brian Biella before the hearing and said, if you think we're getting into something that's trade secret, speak up and let us know, and we'll close the hearing. And you know, I have it in my mind of what to listen to in case we do. So I would just suggest we carry on in the normal fashion. And if something comes up that starts to sound like it's trade secret, then we
can. Give me the example here of what is trade secret.
If you were to say, we've got the Souris River crossing at such and such place, and this pipeline is exactly 5 feet from there or something, I mean, that's when we would start getting into the area of what may be trade secret, the exact location and depth of it in a particular area. That's about it.
So it's the whole entire route, though, that could be. Brian, you're going to say something.
I guess the way I would distinguish it is at the hearings we talked more about generalized locations, nothing like latitude, longitudinal coordinates, stuff where you could pinpoint exactly where the pipeline is. We discussed, the route will go past this person's house or something like that at the hearings. It doesn't specifically state where you could find it with like a GPS finder or something like that. That's more along the lines of where the trade secret comes into play on this.
But I remember asking questions specifically about how many feet from the water line does a pipe going to start going underneath. That'd be a very specific trade secret type of request, it sounds like.
It would be, but we didn't pinpoint it necessarily. I mean, they would say it would be, for example, 30 feet back from, they'd start boring 30 feet back from where the water would be, but you wouldn't be able to get a north, south, east, west location on that exact spot from our conversations that we had there.
Well, this is a very good discussion and good to know, because is there something that we could put, maybe just a clarification letter, what exactly, the fact that it's interstate, I get that, but what volume amount trips that?
I don't think that there's necessarily something that...
But then we've cited other interstate lines before. Yeah. Here's the thing is that there's I've already had several public inquiries about exact locations of the pipeline. And, of course, I've referred those to Stacy, and she's given them access, not given them, she's referred them to the website. So anything that's on the website, they have access to. But oftentimes we get a lot of questions, and I want to make sure I'm answering this correctly. So I have a little more clarity what exactly, what pipeline makes that information protected.
There's not necessarily a clear standard. I mean, it's up to the company to request and provide their basis for why they believe it's trade secret, and then, you know, you can evaluate it. And
when did they do that?
They've done it three times. I mean, two times recently, and we haven't, I guess, responded to those applications yet because they were recent filings for the supplement.
But when they do that, is that the ALJ that says, yes, that's trade secret? It is correct. And so they were granted this by the ALJ before the hearings? Okay, so that's something I probably didn't read or catch beforehand. Okay.
Randy, it's actually really pretty limited in this case. I think what the trade secret information is, I would be surprised if we had to actually get into it in very many discussions.
I don't recall ever hardly getting into specific locations on pipelines ever. Okay. Randy, do you have any question about that, or are you clear about all that?
Well, the clarity, it doesn't sound like there is a real clear thing. A lot depends on what the company requests and then whether that's deemed to be appropriate or not. I think it's only logical that some of this not be quite so public.
Oh, absolutely.
It's important. People need to know about where it's going, especially the landowners and things like that, so they can make their deals and plan appropriately and everything. But this is important national and international infrastructure, and it shouldn't be so specific that someone can just go and pinpoint it.
And to give you another idea, I mean, the other thing that is trade secret protected here are the engineering documents, you know, the real specific, this is pretty much every detail about the pipeline. I mean, that if somebody wanted to do something on it, they could have just, you know, basically a real specific, you know, just a map of the entire thing from every nut and bolt to along the way. So,
well, I think that part of I'm thinking kind of outside this case a little bit is that there's a lot of scrutiny coming on continuing to be on pipelines, and we start closing meetings and having pipeline siting discussions. We better know exactly why we're doing it and what the law says, and all of those things that give us the jurisdiction.
And I'll tell you, I think
we're just having a general discussion.
If I'm correct, at least as far as the pipelines we've been involved in, this is obviously the biggest also, but this is the first one I think that the
Keystone line that went through the eastern part of the state, that was before my time here. So it'd be interesting to look back at that case.
But this is the first one we've had trade secret issues on any pipeline that I've been involved in.
But only because they requested it.
Correct.
And then do you guys know, or can you get me the part of the federal law that says that we can do this?
Yeah.
That'd be very helpful, because then I can, if you've asked the question, the procedure, the way I'm hearing you guys tell me, the procedure is if pipeline company X requests trade secret information because of this, and this, under federal law, we grant it. The ALJ grants it. And then if that discussion comes up, then we don't even have to motion to go into executive session. We just go into executive session.
Yeah, when you get into the trade secret part, I mean, I would say, hey, stop, we got to close it. We're talking about trade secret. But I really doubt we would, sure, for the most part, have to go there.
But the markings on this pipeline will be just like, I mean, once the pipeline is in the ground, they'll still have their markings. So if someone could walk out there visually and just walk right down the road.
Yeah, it's...
Back to the landowner concerns that will come up. Okay. All right. I think that's all the questions I had. I just had a lot of questions about the trade secret and what that exactly be. Randy, do you have any more questions about the trade secret?
I do not.
All right. Commissioner Fedorchak, this is your portfolio, and so I'll
sorry.
Overdue.
Sorry to be late. There's only so fast I can get an 85-year-old woman with a bad knee to move. So we got here, got that done as fast
no
as
problem.
I could. Appreciate your patience.
We didn't. No, we just wanted to walk through the executive session background, I guess, if you
yep. will, so. Good. Okay, so I see that we have a draft order. I haven't had a chance to look at that, so I don't know how you guys feel, but maybe we'll set that. What I thought we'd go through is some of the late filed exhibits and some of the outstanding information. And then Julie has done a very nice job putting together a summary of the public comments. And so that's the stuff that I thought we could go through today just to begin working through whatever issues we have on this project. So let's start with the, let's see here. How about the UND exhibit number 2, UND North Dakota Pipeline Company LLC meetings, the Oakville Prairie Report. I thought this was positive development. It sounds like both the entities are working together and working through some of the issues. It doesn't sound to me like there's talk here about moving the line, just how to put it through there in the least impactful way. Is that correct, your understanding as well, guys?
That's my understanding from reading the exhibit, yeah.
Okay. And have we had an update since then? It sounded, this came in April 4th. They said that it was going to be a couple more weeks. Do we have any information since this time? Okay.
We haven't received anything either.
Okay, and you haven't heard from them? Okay.
When you say them, you mean the UND or them?
The company? On an update?
That was the question. I know we asked for late filed exhibits, but so that's with the company, but how do we get UND's viewpoint of this discussion?
They signed the letter.
Their general counsel.
Well, I'd assume that they're speaking on behalf of the folks involved in the discussion.
At the hearing when the lady testified, I don't have her name right in front of you, I know she was... There were some people from UND who did testify
Johnson.
At the
yep.
Dr. Johnson, yes. When they testified, it seemed like they were on behalf of their department at UND.
Mm-hmm.
As far as speaking on behalf of the entire university, that wasn't exactly clear. It seemed like it was more just on behalf of their department.
I remember asking that question about did she raise those concerns with President Kelly, and there was a nebulous answer.
Right. So as far
as... Johnson is a VP. She's pretty high up. So if it had been... I'm sure that she, but that is a good question to follow up and see if the council is just signed it to make it legal or, you know, who all is involved on UND's side.
Yeah, and what you'll see on this exhibit, too, is Dr. Johnson was copied on it.
I think I just want to make sure that, at least for me and with my colleagues, if we agree or not, I guess we'll see, but that is who we're going to be dealing with, is that person now speaks for UND.
Yeah.
So there may be at some point in time you get somebody inside the college does not agree with their own general counsel.
Mm-hmm.
That's their own internal housekeeping issues.
Yeah.
So
and you know with the council signing it and you know if there's you know we can always call and verify that hey you really do agree with this letter and you know do that.
I'm not interested in that. I just wanted to just make sure.
Well. Yeah, I guess it's not for us.
Yep. Exactly.
To decide well, how they decide it.
Yep, okay. Good. Thank you, Julie.
All right. So I thought that was a good update. Let's talk about the Devil's Lake water level study. All right. Did you guys have a chance to look through this? Randy and Brian? Yeah. I had a few questions on page 2. So they talk about the construction of the northerly route and some of the negative aspects of it would affect some small communities, add 35 miles to the route, affect some additional waterfall production areas, and increase the impact to wetlands by 245%. The advantage, which they don't really talk much about, would be that it avoids locating potentially in the bottom of Devil's Lake. So how did you guys read this issue and the downsides of going on that northerly route?
Well, the challenges with water tables, I guess I've always looked at in a general nature, is as long as the constructability, they can get in there and do what they have to do, water levels will change over time. So I'm confident with what the company has submitted. I wouldn't be too interested in moving too much off of that. And then I guess if that's what you're to get
yep,
right to
was,
it.
I was looking for your perspective on that. How about you, Randy?
I think there's risk either way. And I don't know how you define it. You could move up there and could cause a problem up further north. You could stay down here and the problem could be down here. Either way, there's some danger in it. And it seems to me, in this case, the risk is primarily theirs. And I guess I'm okay with this route on that, as far as that issue is concerned.
Could we get more information so that we know exactly what we're looking at, how much of the route would be under the, like in terms of miles, under the outlet level? So the high point of Devil's Lake before it spills over, how much of the route it's not real clear. And I'd just like to narrow that down so we know that. And then in terms of mitigation, I was curious. They talk about the use of various methods to control the buoyancy. How is it different if you're going under in this area where it may or may not flood versus going under a water body that you know exists? You know, because it could someday be under a lake.
Are you asking?
Yeah. Do we know this?
I recall them having a conversation about the buoyancy at the hearings. I know it was something that we fleshed out a little bit. Actually, we got deeper into it than my understanding really can encompass, I guess.
Right.
It's more of an engineering question as far as that goes. The way I understand it is if there's a potential for the pipeline to float, basically, they try to mitigate that by placing those concrete bags, I believe it was, on top of it. So I would think from the letter where I'm looking at, it's a little bit ambiguous as to which parts of it, you know, where they'll determine they need to start implementing buoyancy control. I would assume that'd be something that their engineers would look at and figure out what would be the best way of controlling that throughout the pipeline where need be. But I guess to answer your direct question, I don't know.
How about
exactly
you, Julie?
When it would happen.
You're an engineer.
Well, they do reference in here that they have different methods for different states of water movement, like for under flowing conditions, they actually utilize some sort of concrete coating as opposed to the saddlebags.
Mm-hmm.
So it appears they take that into account, whether it's standing or moving water.
Yeah, that's the constructability issues,
right?
I was talking about. As long as they feel comfortable, they can construct it. Doesn't this part of the route we're talking about run parallel to that line number 1 almost all the way during this area?
81?
81, yeah. And the reason I'm going up with that is that I think, for my preferences, they've already got a line in there that they have to make sure they're working with and they have response plans for. It's almost better to have these two lines closer together for response than you're responding to one area.
I think this
will.
Is
this really different?
It varies quite a bit from it because line 81 sounds like to me right in the middle of Lake Devil's Lake.
Yeah,
or
I think this is.
So the point is they already have a line that they have to watch very closely. So
that's my understanding as well. This would be an alternate route to where Line 81 is currently at.
Yeah.
But it would be significantly closer than if they continue to go even farther north.
To Line 81.
Correct. Right.
Yeah. Well, excuse me, I'm going to run and grab a tissue here in a sec. When we know, perfect. Thank you.
Excuse me. Last week my ear started bleeding too, Randy.
Who keeps these out there? You do?
Esther.
Oh, Esther. Smart. Okay. Approving a route that we know may be wet someday but isn't now. I just want to have a full understanding of what they're going to do now to prepare for the future when it's wet. If we're going to approve this route and they're not going to get it out of area, that could very well. And Representative Nelson testified, and I know this from my experience in the governor's office and Senate office, that this area, the spillover point, you know this too, I'm sure, from Water Commission, is not the same up there because the water backs up. It's actually probably a higher level. And so they're preparing for the low level down closer to the actual outlet, and the water is probably a couple feet higher in this part of the basin. So they need to be preparing for that as well, and it doesn't sound to me like they have taken that into consideration, and that's not reflected in this chart either, in this late filed exhibit.
And I will say, I think this is this is the most ticklish thing on this whole.
Yeah.
Pipeline.
Let me ask that's you. My sense too, Randy.
And I just don't know where to put it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's better.
Let me ask a procedural question and go back to the center to Grand Forks line. Did you do that one, Mitch?
No.
That was, well, anyway, the way I understand, okay, let's say we don't agree that, we agree that this is not where we want the route, then we can't tell them to put it somewhere else. We would just, you reject this portion, so would you, I'm not saying this is where I'm agree at, but I'm just saying to walk this through both sides of the spectrum. We would say the corridor, we'd then open the corridor up so wide and they would have to come back with another one, or would you just outhand reject from point whatever to point whatever?
If you're fine with everything else going up to there and it looked like there was room in there that would be acceptable to you, you know, I think what that would involve would be you could reject it and give the reasons for it and have them identify a route that addresses those reasons for the commission's consideration, you know, kind of in subsequent proceedings from the order rejecting it.
Now, if you're going to go walking us all the way through, okay, let's say you do all that and a company comes back with a different route, you would probably have to go back up and do another hearing in Devil's Lake.
I would probably, yes.
I'm just thinking this all the way through, if that's the route we go down.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming that would mean it's located at least a fair enough distance away. You'd probably be involving other landowners and maybe some other issues, so it would probably be a material change that would at least require an notice of opportunity for hearing, but probably would require an actual additional hearing.
Okay. Is there a point in the route where maybe we could even narrow that down? I'm sure there is a point where we should maybe get to it. If this turns out to be the last sticking point, up to this point, we're sure okay. Up to this point, we're okay going the other way. Then we have to deliberate more to focus it down. Maybe that's something, Julie Prescott, you could look at a little more closer for the... I'm guessing we won't decide today on the project, so we might have another work session. So, anyway, that's just a thought.
Well, and we still have the UND stuff that we need to let work its way through.
So what exactly, Julie Fedorchak, what exactly we want to get from the company to make sure I understand what we're asking to?
How they're planning, what their plans are to construct this through the area. How specifically, how much of it lies underneath the or below the, what is it,
158?
1458. How many miles or feet or however much is
okay.
we're dealing with specifically, and then what their plans are in construction to prepare for the fact that it could someday be underwater. And we should probably, Julie, can we get from the Water Commission what the real spill level is at that area? Wouldn't they have that?
There are some maps already prepared. I can ask for the GIS information.
Okay.
I can ask for that. They do have maps at various elevations. I'll ask.
Now, if that's not in the record, what
there's happens? Two issues there. We may be able to, depending on how late file exhibit 5 is defined, it could be added potentially as a supplement to late file exhibit 5. Julie and us at the request commission can likewise, you know, do this as an investigation and gather that information if it's not, and then we would supplement the record with that information.
Okay. It seems relevant to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's not as hard. We don't have a bunch of other interveners and things like that to add to the record.
Yeah. It at first glance, it seems relevant to late filed exhibit 5, so we could probably supplement that, but if not, we can supplement the record in other ways.
Randy, do you have a question? I didn't mean to cut you off.
When we're ready to move on from this spot, before we go to the next spot, we're done with this?
I think so. Thank you, sir.
So we know what we're going to get that spill level and the company's plans for how they're going to construct in that area. I think they've spelled out some of that, but it's curious to me that it's just a buoyancy issue versus boring under a body that you know exists, like a river, and how that's significantly different. And over time, if it's underwater a long time, wouldn't you want it protected as much as you'd have, say, a river crossing?
Well, I think for me, what I know about pipelines is that when you go underneath a river, you're not actually touching any water bodies. You're just boring well below the saturation
right.
line, so it's just like being underground. You've got to go deep enough. So this, if they would be willing to go down way, I mean, you'd have to drop down even lower, but they could do that. The problem is this is such a longer run.
Right, yeah. So I just need to understand that. I'm sure there's a good engineering explanation. I just don't have it. Okay, Randy.
Yeah, you referenced the first thing we talked about just kind of as an aside, and since we're probably being listened to, depending on how you meant that, I may strongly disagree.
You define the first
what
thing?
First thing?
The UND situation.
Oh.
While it's nice if we get into a project and all landowners are in agreement with it, and I'm glad they're working together, I hope they resolve it, but I think it's been our experience that most of these big projects end up with a couple of landowners that don't ever reach agreement, and I understood you to say that we also have to wait for UND to get that done, and I guess I don't quite agree with that. I hope they can come to a resolution, but if not, I think we'll have to make a decision one way or the other whether we approve that corridor with or without their approval. So I just don't want to leave something that they have a veto authority on this.
No, what I intended to say is I would like to wait until they come back and say we either figured it out or we can't, and then to let this work itself through to a decision point from them.
Well, we're on that one more time to make sure I'm clear on. Did we finally flush out in the record that the North Dakota University system has given authorization to go through that area? Is that fully on the record?
I know it was addressed, the exact contents of that conversation. I have to go back and listen to the hearing to remember exactly what was said on that point, but I do know that was addressed at one of the hearings.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a decision made either way. I believe it was owned by the North Dakota University system, though. Yeah. But to say that as a matter of fact, I'd have to go back and listen to that portion of the hearing again.
It's an interesting discussion, though, because we don't do the easements, and I don't want to get into the easement business, but it often comes up in just the discussion. So anyway, that might be a finding down the road that, depending how it goes with the unit with UND, that'd be a sub-finding of the other finding, maybe. I don't know.
They came back at one of the hearings and followed up and said, here's the official.
I believe it was the North Dakota University System who was the actual owner of that property. But like I said, I'd have to listen to that to verify 100% sure.
Yes, it'd be. I agree with that. It'd be much smoother if they could work it out with UND so we don't have to make the decision of, I don't mind making a decision. I think that's the point you're setting up, that UND doesn't hold the veto power.
Correct.
Fair point.
So then I thought we could talk about exhibit number 4, which is a nice, positive development. And this is the one where the fellow came to the hearing, said, I don't understand why they're zigzagging through here like this. It'd sure be nice if they just went north and cut straight across where there's fewer impacts to homes. And so they sounds like they talked it out, and they're going to move it. So that was, I was pleased to see that.
Just a follow-up question. That doesn't impact any new landowners that didn't before, that they have to be notified. Or does it? Because he's happy, maybe somebody else isn't.
That's a good point. We should check and see if that easement was obtained.
I do recall at the hearing that there were multiple landowners with regard to this part that did testify about it or voice concerns about it. So I think it was thoroughly addressed there, but again, we'll have to go back and check that to verify.
Yeah, we should confirm that we're not shifting it from one disgruntled landowner to a different one, just because this one was the one at the hearing and the others didn't know that it was going to impact them.
Exactly.
Yeah, the Gunderson. I wonder if the Gundersons are the new ones. But, okay, yeah, clarify that.
Well, I agree with you. I'm glad they did it, just to make sure we...
Yeah, no, for sure. Okay. And then, I don't know if you guys looked through the... I thought we'd leave the potential...
order?
No, the record, the closed records for the last...
Secrets.
Yeah, for the last thing to talk about. And so I just wanted to pull out the public comment chart. I had a couple questions to see if staff had any more information. On the Bo Bateman, the fellow who came to our hearing in Grand Forks, and he made a couple comments about easements, which I think we've got information on to clarify, and pipeline depth and all of that. But... did his comments, were his concerns addressed, in your opinion, at the hearings about future development? And we talked a lot about how roads would be constructed over the pipeline in that area. And it seemed like his concerns were addressed, but I just wanted to get your understanding of that, or maybe we can follow up with the record and double check to see. And if he's signed an easement, couldn't tell that either.
It was something we talked about in Devil's Lake quite extensively as far as urban development goes around the Grand Forks area,
mm-hmm.
and the potential of that happening. I feel like the record's fairly solid on that issue at least. I know we had a fairly long discussion mm-hmm. about it in Devil's Lake. It wasn't discussed in Grand Forks nearly as well as it
right.
was in Devil's Lake. So I think the record will reflect that was adequately addressed in the Devil's Lake portion of the hearing.
Okay. Right. And then
but before, are you ready to move on from Bateman's points?
Or, I am, but
you know, he had also made the point that they soil test to 4 feet down there in the valley.
Yeah.
And it just seems to me, I mean, yeah, we can say they should one call, but who's going to mark all when you know you're doing it possibly multiple times every year? It just seems to me that through that portion of the Red River Valley, we ought to be burying these facilities a little more than 4 feet.
That's where I'd counter that why do you pick one infrastructure and put a different standard than others? There are the telephone lines and gas lines and all the distribution lines are at different depths, so they you can't just say they don't have to use one call because we've needed to build it deeper. I think the requirement is what it is. So that's my thoughts on that.
Well, but the things that we regulate, knowing what we know, I think they all ought to be going down that deep. We can't control things we don't regulate. If a telephone cooperative buries a line, they bury a line, I guess, without us, our involvement. And frankly, if someone cuts it off with their soil tester, no one even notices until someone calls. But if they wreck this pipeline with their soil tester, it's much more serious. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the fact that we were talking about trade secret protection for real minute details earlier is an indication that this is a much more serious thing.
Mm-hmm. I guess we can hash that out. But I wonder if, don't we have a law in North Dakota books that says we cannot put stricter standards on certain things than the federal standards have? And so that's just another thought I'd thought of. So we don't have to decide that today, but it's just...
Well, just maybe you guys can get, if there's any legal issues with requiring a deeper depth for a portion of the line.
It would seem like they would want to. I mean, obviously, they don't want their pipe getting damaged. And knowing that that's a kind of a standard farming practice in a region, it would just seem to me that they would be the ones who would want to do that.
Okay, good point. I think that kind of summarizes that. Senator Triplett testified on a number of issues, and the one that I recall most of them being addressed in terms of the going further south, and but the corrosion, the potential pipeline corrosion through the Grand Forks Salt Flats. Julie, do you have
there was some testimony on that from the company. I believe the testimony indicated that it's actually less likely to corrode in an alkaline environment as opposed to an acidic one. So that could actually sort of be seen a positive.
Okay.
As per the testimony.
Mm-hmm. And there was a number of comments throughout the hearings in different locations on that issue. So... just looking here. Jane Owen commented, it's too close to City of Grand Forks. You guys recall how far south of Grand Forks this runs? It's a couple miles, was it?
Something. It was, I want to say three to five, something like that.
Okay. Well, I'll go back and relook at that, too. What about the comment that the emergency supplies are too distant from Devil's Lake? Wasn't there discussion about where they were locating? I thought they were locating some in Devil's Lake.
They did. We did have discussion about that. There was testimony given. I believe it was Art Haskins who testified to that at the hearings. Well, it seemed like as far as... They were concerned. My recollection is no matter where you put it, it doesn't matter as long as there's people who can respond to the call and get to the pipeline in a reasonable amount of time to address the issues.
Okay.
That's what he essentially said.
Okay, and then the other question that came up a few times, and I don't recall getting... walking away with a better understanding because I don't really understand drain tiling that well, is how does this, Julie, you probably can explain this with your engineering background. what are the issues with pipelines through areas where there's drain tile being used?
From working at the Water Commission, I know that there's significant areas of Grand Forks County where sections are tiled. And the drain tiles, I believe, are typically buried about 3 feet, 3 and 4 feet. And so there's, you invest all this money in this massive drain tile system, and the pipeline comes through. So those were the issues.
Mm-hmm.
To drain the surface of the drain tile, of course, being to remove surface water.
And how far down are the drain tiles? 3 feet?
3 feet, I believe, 3 and 4 feet. So it's kind of in the same realm.
How would it work? So it would, could it come right up against the drain tile through, right through it, and then how would that work from a functional standpoint?
Well, often they're patchwork patterns, and the drain tile go different directions, and they all drain underground to a conduit, and it goes, you know, to a road ditch or wherever they outlet the thing to. So there's possibilities that they could parallel the tiles in some cases, but a pretty high likelihood they'll be cutting across,
mm-hmm.
cutting across them at some point. So,
so it makes them useless if that happens.
It just creates a problem, I guess.
The water flow underground.
Well, it would. It's be kind of like cutting through your sprinkler system. You just have to go and repair it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's just the financial. They're just concerned. The calls that I took, they were concerned about what happens to our systems.
No, it's a fair concern because if you get your field draining this way and the pipeline comes right through there, that's where the depth, quite honestly, that if lowering it, I'm not for making it deeper because of people not using coal before you dig, but if there are certain areas that they would go below the water table level to avoid drain tile, that might be interesting. But we don't have a lot in the record where specifically people's drain tile. Is that just general concerns, I would guess?
Right. What is the drain tile made out of? Is it cement, or what they're do they like put down there?
HDPE, they're like plastic pipe.
Perforated
so plastic pipes. Pipe. It's like what goes around your house. Got mm-hmm. a lot of similar, mm-hmm. I guess you could look at it as that, just sort of a sump to mm-hmm. Convey the water to an appropriate outlet to get to surface for agricultural uses.
Mm-hmm. And drains to like a coulee someplace, or they to a stream, or do they try to collect it someplace, or a ditch, or
a lot
where
of
does it go?
They just drain to road ditches.
I
can tell you too, in the certification, there's a clause that says the company will repair all drain tile broken or damaged as a result of construction. So that's
say
in
that
the,
again,
in the certification. For mm-hmm. the order provisions, the company is required to repair any drain tile that's broken or damaged during construction. So presumably if they're putting the pipeline in place and they break, you know, if the drain tile, like Julie said, is 3 feet and the pipeline's 4 feet below it, if they break some going through there, they're responsible to fix that. So if it's underneath it, I would presume it's required to be put back all together as it was prior to construction of the pipeline. So that is in our certification.
Solution then.
Yeah, and all those easement signers, even if they're not the current farmer, I would think are the drain tile industry is new enough. Those people must all know that they have drain tile and are going to be watching for this. And
That's why I was curious that it came to us that they would even have dealt with that in their easements. But, okay, those are, the main questions that I had about some of the public comment. I don't know if you guys had any additional.
I had one more. We had, I think, some people that we just kind of had go talk to Julie afterwards up in Minot. Mr. Zablotny was the first, or at least one of them, that complained about the pipeline that came through some years ago, must have been about the flood time, and it's owned by Oxable, which is also affiliated with Enbridge. And was anything ever resolved? Is there going to be any effort made to go back and piece that together?
Because that after that discussion, the companies that owns the pipeline now that there was concerns on didn't even know that those landowners had concerns. Mm-hmm. And so that company, which it was not a jurisdictional pipeline. At the hearing, I guess we thought maybe it was, but we actually didn't cite that part of it. It was not jurisdictional. But when the company that owns it now found out about it, they talked to those landowners, and they've been out there since then and worked with those two landowners. Okay. So that I'm not Travis called.
Well, they mentioned it to me when they were here the other day that they're still working with that landowner and trying to make it fix the problems.
So that was actually a good outcome because the company that owns it now, and it goes back to where the landowner hadn't contacted the people that own it now. And to your point, you talk about how these things change ownership sometimes. So that's what I think we're at right now.
Have you been involved in that much, Julie? You talked to him, but...
I visited with them, and then I visited with Commissioner Kalk after I researched the history of the Pecan Pipeline.
Mm.
And then he resolved...
But we resolved they were talking.
Got involved
they were talking. Yeah. Yes. I haven't heard anything. No one's called me since then. I gave them my card. So,
would you mind following up with him just to see from the landowner's perspective? We've heard from the company, but it'd be good to check back with the landowner and see how he's feeling.
There were several that I visited with, so I'll go through it.
Okay. Okay. Some of these other exhibits. I haven't read exhibit number 3 yet. I will take a peek at that. I don't have any questions on it. And the easement form as well. I'll take a closer look at that. I'm assuming some of these issues that people brought up about easements and long-term holding harmless issues are addressed in the easement, so I wanted to look at that. So, leaves us to our, unless you guys have anything else, the final... exhibit, Brian, that you had requested the shape file and.
Yeah, that's where. Before we move on, just a quick question, just for Brian, that I perused through the draft order one time, but I wonder if when we do the final order, the comments of Matthew Duncombe, the good member of the labor union, who came and testified for it and accompanied his work. You know, sometimes we put people's public testimony in the record, and sometimes or in the order, and sometimes we don't. But I don't know. That's something to think about. That it's not very often we get someone representing an organization like that comes and testifies in support of a project, and we put in there that so and so testified on behalf of UND and her concerns. Well, do we ever put the flip side of there that someone testifies the other side?
As far as a legality portion of it or issue of it goes, I guess I wouldn't really see a issue there. It would be just kind of up to your discretion on that, whether you wanted to include that type of a statement in there or not.
I don't know. I just like to think about it a little bit more and bring it up to my colleagues. We usually tend to just put the quote-unquote negative things that come out in the record so we address them. So I don't know if that's a road we'd start going down or not, but maybe it's something just for the verbal of whenever we get to a vote on it.
And again, I think that's, up to your discretion on that. As far as, legalities go, I don't see...
One way or the other?
I don't see one way or the other on that.
Okay. Does it have anything to do with whether it's pertinent to our issues? Their support was... I mean, they spoke highly of Enbridge, but then they were talking mostly about the value of the jobs. Which... I don't know that it's part of our criteria.
No, I think
I think it would be the kind of higher standards and demanding quality of work that they
positives
testified that
Enbridge.
That Enbridge itself has held their crews to when they've worked for them in the past on similar projects.
I would agree. It would be you'd be able to work it in as relevant
that
under
standpoint.
That under that standard. Yeah.
Okay. Not opposed to it.
I had not thought of that, so I haven't really thought it out.
That's why I just threw it out.
Brought it up, but if they had come in and said, "We have worked on Enbridge projects in the past, and it was really shoddy. We think this is really dangerous." I think we would be including that as a concern, and
we would.
So
we'd probably have to address
Well, are we going to include all the comments from this Sierra Club and folks talking about the problems Enbridge has had in other areas?
Yeah. Well, that's why I bring it out there, because you're right. Once we open up the door, then we have to make sure we All right, let's just table that one. Julie, you were saying about the my request about those files going in and out of the river. Our discussion when I first talked with them is I don't think we need to close it just to, as long as there's a rationale that where they're going to come in and come out, I don't need to know the specific 30 feet from here or whatever it might be.
And we can all look at that separately. So
yeah, I think so.
If it doesn't require discussion amongst us, then I guess we don't need to talk about it now, unless you guys would like to. Julie?
Not unless you want to.
Okay.
The only thing I wanted to clarify is just a little bit of more of what is the, if we could shape almost just, and maybe this is more of a PSC document of what makes something trade secret for a interstate transmission pipeline, and get that to Stacy too. So, because this is the first time we've kind of dealt with this since I've been here. And just so there's a PSC, we understand. We can't always just say, sure, we can get you a copy of the files on a pipeline. Because usually that's kind of been what we've always done, because we've never had this request. And they're the appropriate federal law that supports this trade secret, we asked them to put that together too. So if someone says, well, what authority do you have this? You can say under federal law 123, they've had companies ask for it, and here's what is protected.
I'm just going to pull up. See if maybe I can answer that real quickly. I'm pulling up the ALJ's order on that to see if he provided.
I believe it's part of the Patriot Act,
sure.
If I remember correctly, is where the.
Let's just do that. Can you guys get that to Julie Prescott, and then Julie, can you just nothing else, just put an email together and on a general nature of.
It's all in our docket, and it deals with. I mean, it goes through one, the open records law, plus the PSC's rules and regulations on trade secret, plus the federal issue on. I mean, so there's several areas of law that are potentially implicated, but it's all kind of set out in their application, our response, and the ALJ.
It essentially comes down to being a critical infrastructure, and that's where they get the.
But we had, I don't want to get too derailed here, but we had this discussion several years ago about this, and I think the difference here is you have a company asking for it, where before Department of Homeland Security wouldn't just give us the carte blanche of this is stuff you protect. So this is what's different about it, which is good. I'm done rambling.
Okay. Randy, anything more?
I do not.
I have nothing further.
Do we want to try to schedule another one since we're all here? Just a thought.
Sure.
Since we have five
minutes. I'm
fine
with that, yeah. How long do you think we should give the company to get back to us on the Devil's Lake stuff? I guess... They're kind of – I'm on their timetable more than ours. I want to be respectful of the fact that they want to get going. So if they want to do this sooner versus later, maybe you can just check with them. We could throw out some dates. Does that work, you guys?
Yeah, I think the way our schedule was yesterday and scheduling or 2 days ago, especially given there's six of us here. Because quite honestly, the earliest we probably could do something is.
What do we have on the 5th, May 5th? You out?
The morning is good. But then that's about it that week.
Which date is that?
May 5th.
Monday.
Or the 8th in the afternoon.
I'd be shocked if we would have that information by the 5th. I mean, no, Julie, you were going to look for some Water Commission stuff, too. I'm thinking we could probably, I mean, to have it be much more substantive than today, I would say probably at least 30 days or a month out, aren't we?
Would be helpful, but...
Yeah?
Well, what about May 23rd? It's Friday. For some reason, that day's wide open for me. Maybe that's because one of you two has a conflict.
Happens to be the Friday before Memorial Day. But it works for me.
Works for me.
Works
Mitch,
for me.
It'd have to be later in the morning.
Makes no difference to me that day I'm here.
I'm wide open.
How about or early afternoon? Let's see here.
Or even the afternoon of the 22nd, there's oil and gas, but we'd probably be wrapped up by the afternoon.
It's not a bad idea. What do you think, Brian? Ryan? Randy?
That conference, I believe, goes all day and that evening.
Event. Yeah. Let's do, how about 1:30 on the 23rd? Or 11? 11 or 1:30?
You guys plan on going anywhere for the holiday?
I don't.
I don't have any plans.
Julie?
I'll be here.
Okay, yeah. I'm not going anywhere either. I just didn't. I don't mind our time, but their time.
Let's do 11 if okay. That works out. Then we get everybody freed up a little earlier in case they come up with some plans.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Excuse me, this is a work session then? Is that what?
Yeah. Correct.
Okay. May 23rd at 11 a.m. So if you can do your magic with Esther and that,
do it. I'll do that.
All right, super. All right. Julie, anything else? Julie?
Nothing for me.
Randall?
Nothing.
All right. Go once, going twice?
Nothing for me.
All right, thank you all. We'll close the work session.